Well, we are thrilled to revisit music by Florence Price again. And I mean, I put myself back to, I think it was 2009, where there were new homeowners in this Chicago suburb, and they found in the attic boxes and boxes of music. They didn't know what it was, and thank goodness they didn't throw it out. And it turned out to be Florence Price's collection of so much music, which has now been performed and has been
cataloged.
Cataloged, and it's really making a resurgence here, or an appearance. I think there's no record of the piece that we're going to be playing performed in her lifetime. It was got an honorable mention at the Chicago Wanamaker Composition Competition that you referenced, that she won with her first symphony in E minor. But this piece is called Ethiopia's Shadow in America. Now, I'm going to read what she wrote in the score, and then I've got a question for you.
Okay.
So she wanted this score to portray three things. Mm-hmm. First, the arrival of the Negro in America when first brought here as a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Second, his recognition and faith. Mm-hmm. And third, his adaptation, a fusion of his native and acquired impulses, end quote. Now, these three ideas form the three movements which are played without a break. But Marvin, how on earth does any composer, let alone an African-American woman, go about tackling so serious a subject in their music?
It's how we lived.
Hmm.
It's our background.
Hmm.
Unlike, and I'm going to use you as an example.
Okay.
You can trace your history probably several generations back, being from England. I can't do that because my history was either erased or it was mixed. So you can trace your history back generations because records were kept. For me, I can't do that.
Mm.
I can go back at this point to about 1831. But because of slavery, families were sold apart. Mixed families, because the slave master decided that he wanted to have a slave for himself rather than his wife. I saw Chevalier last night, and it's a perfect story.
The movie,
perfect story. I mean, Chevalier's father was the plantation owner. He had a wife and a daughter, but he impregnated Chevalier's mother and then took him away to France. And he had no connection with his heritage until his mother came over. And she had to sort of help him get through all of that. But Florence took the struggle. I've been to Africa. I've walked through the slave castles. I've seen the inhumanity to man that was perpetuated on. And I've lived it, particularly growing up in the 60s during the Civil Rights Movement. I remember seeing the pictures of Emmett Till. Before and after. I remember Medgar Evers getting shot. I remember all these different things, voting rights, the dogs and the hoses. What Florence did was she took a people that were taken from their land, and that's in the spirituals right there.
Right.
And which weren't called that then, but this W. E. Du Bois calls them the sorrow songs, because it was you're being taken out of your homeland, given a whole new language,
right,
subjected to harsh labor, with no way of being free. That's powerful to write about.
It sure is.
Then you got the second part, was the faith that we had, and there's this fallacy that might get me in trouble, but I'm gonna say it anyway. We were not the heathens that they thought we were. You know, we had our own religion, and it was not very far from Christianity. But, you know, the slavery system imposed upon us this other religion that we had to adapt. We had to adapt to, and sort of like the trickster tale, we figured out how to do it without giving up our own souls. And then finally, but it's the faith that kept us going. George Washington had 300 slaves on his plantation. They are all buried facing the Potomac River, facing east.
Wow.
Because you're facing east, you're going back home.
Oh gosh,
that's where Africa was. So these kind of traditions that we carry with us, and then how we had to adapt,
right,
to where we are today. I think in Florence, I take back my own family. My father one of eight children, only one to go to college, got a degree in accounting at a black college, Wilberforce University, and came to Chicago and was told, you're a black man, so we only hire you as a janitor. Mm. How do you adapt in that? My dad, you know, working for the post office, and that's he worked for them for most of his life.
Wow.
But he adapted to where he and my mom bought a house, raised three kids, took us out of college, you know, because there was this dream of adapting that. And I think part of, as I get older, I look back now at the civil rights struggle, because the adaptation was, if we act like the major population will be accepted, only to find out that that's not true. They were never going to accept us. And so, but she wrote about trying to adapt to that.
Right, right.
And so my generation grew up thinking that, okay, if we do these things, then you'll let us be part of. And in some cases, it will never happen, because that thought process is you will never be as equal as we are.
Thank you for this, your viewpoint on this. I think that helps me. Because when I see the title and then I see those descriptions, I think, well, we're in for a very depressing 14 minutes of music. Mm-hmm. And it does begin with a dark yearning. Mm-hmm. Let's just hear a bit of that. And the opening is, of course, the longest section of the piece, but it contains some deeply noble music. Mm-hmm. And after about 5 minutes of the opening, the music picks up energy, though still sad, in my opinion, but it's perhaps reminiscent of the jazz age. Let's hear a bit of that. So the second section now has been described as profoundly religious, connecting with what you were saying, and it features a soft lament of a solo violin accompanied by a string choir. Such a gorgeous melody, and to me it's not dissimilar to Dvorak's second movement melody on the English horn, which is also pentatonic in character. So we're hearing that her piece is aligning conceptually with the Harlem Renaissance, a music by Will Marion Cook, William Grant Still, and Duke Ellington. Mm-hmm. And then we come to the third movement, which is a dance.
Mm-hmm.
So is there celebration in what she's saying? That there has to be.
It has to be.
And this kind of lifts me out of what I was expecting. And this is some of the most upbeat music. It's full of syncopation. We got infectious rhythms. It is, technically speaking, a kind of an orchestral juba dance. Now, The juba dance was a favorite style of Florence Price.
Yes, it was.
It was an early plantation dance developed by African-American slaves. Mm-hmm. And the juba involves body percussion because, in my research, they were prohibited from using drums for fear they would encode secret messages in their rhythms.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And let's hear a bit of this third movement. So you've been talking about, in our podcast, about rhythm. And Florence Price, she said of African-American music that, quote, rhythm is of preeminent importance. In the dance, it is a compelling, onward-sweeping force that tolerates no interruption, end quote. So my final question to you, Marvin, what do you hope our audience gets from listening to this extraordinary piece?
Well, first they'll get it. They'll hear something new
they
haven't heard before.
Yeah,
And I think, and I hope that George will set it up in a way that, as we just talked about, music has context. She named each movement, I believe, of the three. That was the context of them. Slavery was never cute. It was the most devastating thing. And the American slavery system was probably the harshest and cruelest thing of all. And that would cause you to be a lament. It's like the children in the Hebrew children in why are we singing this? How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? There was no, if you can only imagine being taken from your parents and never see them again.
Right.
Separated from your families. People forget about that part, This is not Gone with the Wind, and everybody loved Miss Scarlet.
Right.
That's the fallacy to begin with. So you have this. So for the audience, I think we talk about this musical aesthetics, and I think it is that feeling that this kind of music brings to people that I hope that the audience understands that this is what people have gone through. And now we're at the point where you can dance. You can. We've survived 300 years of this stuff, from where you could not, where if you were caught reading, they put your eyes out.
Oh, gosh.
To where now we're begging kids to read.
Yeah.
Where my parents never imagined, I think they wanted me to be where I am now. But for them, it was impossible because the barriers were there. The barriers have come down. We're at a point where they may go back up if we're not careful. But it's still that struggle. And I think for this concert, having George Shirley, who just turned 90 years old, and is still singing and still an icon, it's about moving people forward and using the music to get people to understand how other people feel.
I love that. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to this concert. Not only have we recently performed music by Florence Price, Gerard Tate, and George Gershwin, but to revisit Dvorak's Ninth Symphony will be very special. It was on my audition concert to become music director here 8 years ago. So you could say
it, really?
It was, yeah. So you could say that I have Dvorak to thank for winning the job. And certainly his legacy has given me and continues to give me a new world here in South Bend, one that my family and I continue to enjoy very much.
And I think you've also given I'm very proud to be the president of the board, obviously, but I've watched the symphony change, and it was time. And I think symphony orchestras need to do more programming and more explanation. You just don't play a piece of music and go home. the way that you talk about it is also important, so people understand.
Yeah.
When we did the first concert, the book club was very instrumental, I think, in helping people to understand why this was important.
Right.
Playing the music was important. Talking about the music was important. And people hearing it for the first time and thinking, wow. But you titled the concert A Special Way.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the African-American composer. It was the American composer.
We just called it American Composers.
And that would use a lot of respect, because we are American composers.
Well, you have played a huge part in our development, getting to this stage, Marvin, with the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. We are in your debt. And it's been fascinating discussing this program, Dvorak's New World and his legacy, with you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you and all of South Bend at our season finale on May 4th at the Morris downtown. Thanks for listening to Aha with Alastair and with Marvin.